What's up? This is Movies on Up. The year we make contact. Shut up, Alexa. Alexa. Hush.
I enjoy how the fact that even in your fucking house, you say Movies on Up and she like won't even play it. That's how bad we suck.
What's up? This is Movies on Up, the year we make contact. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host, Ryan, making contact as usual.
Making contact with the smart speaker back here.
He is Ryan. I am Dave. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this decade is the year we make contact. It is 2020, the start of a new year a couple weeks ago. And technically, not really technically, but everybody says it's the start of a decade. So we're going to go with that. Because it's more round than 2021. So everywhere else you see best of the decade lists. We did our favorites of 2019 last week from last year. So this week we're doing part one of two, our favorite movies of the decade. Not the best movies we saw. That's, I mean, we always try to make that distinction. They're our favorite movies. I wouldn't say the best of. They're
some of them are really good.
Yeah.
Actually, I think they're all really good.
Yeah. I love them.
Yes.
But
not a lot of best picture winners in here.
No. But more diversity than the Oscars, I would say.
Indeed.
Which doesn't take much. Takes one, I think. So we're doing our favorite. Well, how we did this was
collectively.
I don't know the full way, so I'm going to kick it to Ryan for that. I listed 1 through 50, and then I just mailed it to Ryan, and you do the rest.
If I can put in some cockamamie math formulas, I tend to do that. So what I did with this particular list, Dave and I each listed 40 movies, which was perhaps a little overkill for a collective top 20. But it was fun anyway. So we listed our favorites 1 through 40. And depending on how high it was on our list, the movie was assigned a point total. So if it was in like our top 5, it got 10 points on down to a half a point for like the last 36 through 40 on our list. So every movie, I added the points that I gave it, the points that Dave gave it, that gave it a total score. Anything that appeared on both of our lists, anywhere, so my number 1, Dave's number 40, it doesn't matter. I doubled the point totals. I wanted to give more consideration to movies that made the cut for both of us. And if you think about how many movies come out in any given year, let alone a decade, I thought that there was significance that it made both of our 40s. This movie was on both of our minds.
Because we do have similar tastes, but also very different tastes.
Yes.
Like if you listen to our year-end list, I'll sneak Charlie's Angels on there. Ryan will have Farty darty artsy stuff. I'll put Pacific Rim 2 and Ryan will have ooh la la movies. So I didn't know how the formula. I see total numbers next to it,
yeah.
But I didn't know where those came from. So I don't
know where they came from.
I don't know the math behind it. I still don't follow. But
I think looking at the 20, yeah, this checks out.
Yeah, because
I got it right. No matter how I came
I
got it right.
Because when you get to the collective 20, it's a lot of movies that we talk about a lot. It's movies that have made an impression on this podcast over the 8 years that we've done it. So,
a lot of them have been on our end of the year lists before. Some of them have not.
Some of them we've done episodes on.
Absolutely.
A handful of them. I mean, I'm not counting them off the top of my head, but yeah, a handful of them.
I don't remember.
Some get referenced or snuck into any list possible. And a lot of them are barometers that we kind of compare other movies to when we get them. So I think it's a solid list. So enough of that. Ryan, our number 20 movie of the decade, 2010 to 2019 is the decade.
We start off right in the middle of the decade with 2015's Dope, directed by Rick Famuyiwa, starring Shameik Moore, Kiersey Clemons, introduced us to Shameik Moore, who would go on to have another movie real high on Dave's list, higher on our collective list as well. Kiersey Clemons has done some cool stuff as well. I think it was a really fun and well-written story by the director, the writer director.
Tony Revolori's in it.
Yeah, he's in it too.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, we have a Spider-Man
and a Flash.
Right, yeah. We are going to have another high school party movie a bit higher up our list. This one leans a little bit less on the funny aspects, although it does have...
Oh, it's got some great moments.
Right, Anders really good bits.
Or not Anders, the dude from Workaholics shows up and... His bit's pretty funny in it.
But this is more, you know, the neighborhood was a little bit more rough around the edges. And that certainly comes across in this. He directed some Mandalorian stuff, which was really good as well. So, I mean, I think a lot of these folks have gone on to do some really cool stuff in the back half of the decade. But this was a really cool introduction to a lot of, not to beat the Oscar thing again, but a lot of people of color getting to tell a story that was very authentic to at least the director's upbringing, but it was still a story that, I mean, I thought was awesome. Great to see. And Shameik Moore was amazing.
He did The Wood, Brown Sugar, Our Family Wedding. Those were, I hate to use the term, those were black movies that got major releases. Like,
yes.
I remember The Wood and Brown Sugar in wide releases. So,
but it appealed to a relatively narrow demo. This,
those were broad, yes, black comedies, right, essentially. Whereas Dope was more personal. It was a smaller scope. It was a coming-of-age story about a kid who's not your stereotypical... It's not Boys in the Hood. It's set kind of in that same kind of neighborhood.
But it's a little lighter, so didn't grow up gangbanging, you can still enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's lighter, and the main character isn't...
Wants to go to college.
Yeah, isn't one of those characters. Yeah. So it's one of those about somebody... trying to overcome where you're from to do better things. And sometimes life sucks you in. And I was blown away with this movie when I saw it. It's one of those that I remember it getting a lot of hype at the end of that year, and I had kind of missed it, and I caught it later and immediately regretted not seeing it that year because it probably would have been up there with my favorites of that year. I mean, probably pretty high. Shameik Moore is so good. Is this geeky, really smart kid that's thrust into this criminal lifestyle for a day. And it's got one of the best payoffs. It ends up just being this amazing, I don't want to say inspirational, but kind of inspirational story. So he's one of those I'll watch anything he does moving forward. Our 19, a lot of the stuff I said about Dope can be said about this one, from 2010, directed by Joe Cornish, starring John Boyega, who went on to bigger things. It is Attack the Block, 2011. I'm sorry, I was trying to guess as I looked it up. I honestly did not think this movie was this decade.
It seems like it was a long time ago.
It feels like it was so much longer ago, because after this, I waited forever for a Cornish follow-up, and it seemed like Boyega didn't do anything until he got cast in Star Wars, but now you have Jodie Whittaker, who, mm-hmm, she's busy.
She's doing some things.
She got cast on a fairly decent show. I love this movie. It's these kids that are kind of sucked into the atmosphere. They're doing what they need to do to survive in their block, their apartment complex, and it's an alien invasion movie. It's a creature feature, which we don't get good.
And they're cool looking creatures.
We don't get many creature features now. We do get some, but we don't get like...
There's
really...
one a little higher up the list.
Yeah. The visuals are great. The monsters are phenomenal. John Boyega's character, Jodie Whittaker, the dynamic between them. Nick Frost is in there. It has that UK horror movies I've always been drawn to, because it's not just about the body count.
They make you care about
the characters. They make you care about the character. Instead of an American horror movie where you have 12 characters, 11 of them die, you can name one or two. UK horror is good at focusing on six or seven characters. You may only have those four or five deaths, but they mean a lot more. They're much more impactful. And Attack the Block did a good job of that. It's a really good movie. John Boyega, I loved from here. He was the star of my Cloak and Dagger movie in my head that I had for years. Cornish is one of those I'll watch anything he does moving forward just because of this movie.
He went on to write Ant-Man.
With Edgar Wright.
Yeah, right. Which is a movie that we both like an awful lot. He wrote and directed The Kid Who Would Be King from last year, which was really better than it ought to
have been.
Yeah. This is one I think stateside probably could have been missed pretty easily, but I thought it was a lot of fun. like you said, good creature flick that we don't get a lot. That scene in the hallway.
That's, yeah. Like, it's so good. The visuals, there's so much to it. Like, it's funny. Yes. The jokes in it are great, but they're good characters. You get to know John Boyega. You get to know Jodie Whittaker. You get to know the supporting people. You get to know this building and this apartment complex is essentially a character in it. It's just such a well-done movie. Which transitions nicely
to our number 18, which is Karen Kusama's The Invitation from 2015, starring a man who was referred to as fake-ass Tom Hardy, I think, until, was it this movie or was it Upgrade?
Upgrade, and then going back and watching this movie. Because I didn't see him. I don't remember him from anything before seeing him in this. This is the movie where fake Tom Hardy was born. Then I loved Upgrade, and then we did the Invitation episode, and I didn't realize how good it was. That's when he became.
We then became
Jordan Marshall, Logan Marshall Green.
To call him by his name, Logan Marshall Green.
Venom became fake Logan Marshall Green.
Tom Hardy became fake ass Logan Marshall Green. Tammy Blanchard also in here. We have done an Invitation episode. We did it when Destroyer was coming out at the tail end of 2018. We've talked a lot about this.
I think we did it when Upgrade came out.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't remember when we do
things. I know we did it, yeah.
Yes. The point is we had done it. This is one I think we both kind of just stumbled across on Netflix. And not for the last time this list. This is a movie best. The less you know about it. If you didn't catch our Invitation episode, that's actually great. We do kind of spoil a lot in there.
Because it's hard to talk about without spoiling it.
Absolutely.
Because you mentioned something that happens 20 minutes in and it's spoiled. I often say, like,
the dinner party premise.
I'm a sucker for movies that can be summed up in a sentence, like a bunch of people go to a dinner party. If that's enough to get me in and you can keep me, that's fantastic. The simple setup is Tom Hardy and his girlfriend, Logan Marshall Green, and his girlfriend, they've been invited to a dinner at his ex's house. That's it, with mutual friends and everything. Go in knowing that and only that. And it's fantastic. Karen Kusama, obviously not introduction to her. She did Jennifer's Body, Girl Fight, and Aeon Flux.
Yeah.
And then Destroyer. So she's another one. These three, the first three that we've done, and this is kind of a theme that we'll see continuing, is they're really good directors that these movies made us fall in love with them.
We got hip to a lot of really good directors this decade. I think it is. Oh. And I think our next team of directors...
This next one, going with the director's things, this is one of those that it's, when you do a decade list, it's easy to know, like, oh, obviously I'm going to skip something. And it wasn't until I saw this in our collective top 20 that I thought, like, did I forget that one? And then I immediately thought, oh, it would be higher because I just simply forgot it.
That's probably why it is where it is, because it was real high on my list, and that's why it's in here.
Yeah, it would have been higher had I not been forgetful of 2014's What We Do in Shadows, directed by Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi, written by both of them. I thought Taika directed it on his own, so I cut you off when you said pair of directors, because I was thinking it was just a Taika movie.
There is a pair of directors coming up immediately
after
this.
That's why I got thrown off. We did an episode on this. It might have been this past October or last October. I don't remember.
I don't think it was this October.
Oh, because we did Survivor Girls. Yeah. I know we've done an episode on this movie. Taika's kind of blown up.
Yes.
Thor Ragnarok, Jojo Rabbit is getting love this year. So he's gotten a lot of love. This movie, it's just silly. It's just a documentary about vampires, and
not particularly good vampires.
Yeah, it's funny. They turned it into a show on probably FX or FXX or FXXXX, I don't know, but Mark Hamill's on season 2. It's just such a funny, ridiculous movie.
Horror comedy when it's done well.
Horror in the sense that there's vampires in it.
Yeah, that genre. If you're able to put some jokes in there, I mean, I would say like Leslie Vernon is a bit of a horror comedy, but it's certainly much more horror than What We Do in the Shadows.
Well,
Tucker
it transitions
and Dale.
Leslie Vernon transitions into a slasher, from comedy to a horror movie.
Those are movies that we like an awful lot because we have an affinity for that genre, like vampire stuff anyway. So they had me at the concept. This is one of the most rewatchable movies I have on my list. I like the show, even. Some of the characters from the movie do make an appearance in the show. Beanie Feldstein's in the show. She's really funny and in a small part. I am down for this universe. More of it, please. Taika went on to direct in the MCU. And our next guys, they started in the MCU and then went on to kind of cap off the MCU, and that's the Russo brothers. But before they met their endgame, they did Captain America Winter Soldier from 2014, starring Captain America, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Samuel L. Jackson. For me, Winter Soldier kind of showed that the Marvel movies could straddle genres. And what I mean by that is they weren't necessarily just straight up comic book movies. This one seemed like the first real team-up, which we saw in Ragnarok with Hulk and Thor, Spider-Man and Iron Man to a certain extent. But this put Captain America and Black Widow together, and I thought that their chemistry was really, really good. And going into genres, I mean, we would get Ant-Man, which was a heist movie. We've had, this is Marvel's version of X, and I think Winter Soldier was the first one to really do that. The last act in this movie has some really great action for essentially people that don't have superpowers. I mean, Captain America is really strong. He can get his ass kicked and keep fighting. But everybody else,
do this all day.
Everybody else is, it's a kick, kick, punch, punch movie, but it's a really well shot and well staged kick, kick, punch, punch movie.
Yeah, and this Thor 2 is known as one of the worst Marvel movies. Iron Man 2, one of the worst Marvel movies. This is the first real sequel that Marvel got right. And it did help Marvel transition kind of into the buddy movie. You know, look at where we've got Thor Ragnarok as Thor and Hulk, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then the TV shows, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Wanda and Vision. It opened up a whole new world of let's get these characters together and have them work together, and let's mess with genres. It opened up Ant-Man for a heist movie, Guardians of the Galaxy for like a space comedy. I think this was the turning point. Joe Johnston directed the first Captain America. He's a great director. Had he done the second one, we'd be looking at a completely different MCU, because he would not have delivered the Winter Soldier that the Russo brothers did. And that's why they did Civil War. That's why they, after Whedon bailed, he made two of them. So after he left after Ultron, they were the perfect choice. So again, I'll watch them, whatever they do from here moving forward. And there's kind of a theme, because as we go from What We Do in Shadows, which was dual directors, to Captain America Winter Soldier, which was dual directors, from the Russo brothers to the Knott brothers, Phil Lord and Chris Miller from 2012, it is 21 Jump Street, written by Michael Bacall, who I thought was going to blow up. I thought he was going to be the one writing every movie moving forward, because he had like a hell of a year in 2012, but no massive hits lately that I think of. But it's a common theme with Lord and Miller is that they take ideas that shouldn't work, that are terrible on paper, and they make them work. I liked the 21 Jump Street show with Johnny Depp and DeLuise and Richard Grieco, and I liked that show. It was a heavy drama show. I watched it when I was a kid. So then you get Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum, and you're going to make a comedy of it. That's a terrible idea. Except they nailed it. The chemistry between Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill is ridiculous. They come at it playing two different characters that complement each other well. As actors, they complement each other well. Channing Tatum, this was his McAvoy turn movie. Because I was never a Channing Tatum fan. Now, love him because of this movie, because of Janko. It's not just a funny movie. It's a really, really good movie. It's got great laughs, but the story is there, and the character arc is the thing. I think the character arcs of these two guys is more important than the overall story. It's just kind of a vehicle to get their characters built up, and it's really, really good. I love it. I love the sequel. I would love the 23. I would love them as Men in Black. It couldn't have been worse than International.
That's absolutely. I don't know how many people had a better decade than Lord and Miller. They have three movies that are on our list. This is just the first. And I think you're spot on. To take what was not a comedy and turn it into one of the funniest movies of the decade. The property of 21 Jump Street, outside of Dave, I don't think anybody else cared about. So you're taking
Richard Grieco's mom for a season.
So you're taking something that's nobody really cares about a good 30 years after the fact, something that's not a comedy, and oh, this is what we're going to use for a comedic vehicle, starring Jonah Hill, who we all know can do comedy, and Magic Mike. That does not sound like it's going to work very well. Was it pre-Magic Mike?
Magic Mike was that summer, I think.
Either way, a guy not known for comedy, if he's known for anything, just being
good looking.
Yeah. A face. But he certainly showed that he had charisma and comedic timing here. Speaking of pretty face, our number 14 stars a guy with a pretty face, but you never know it because it's under quite a bit of makeup. That is Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise in Andy Muschietti's It. We're going to specify chapter one because we didn't like the second one, and I don't want you thinking that that's it. This one with the kids, Jaden Martell, Finn Wolfhard.
Sophia Lillis.
Yeah. Man, there's quite a dichotomy between chapter one and chapter two. Chapter one, I thought, was one of the best Stephen King adaptations that we saw on the big screen. I mean, for years. There was a time, well, there were two times, then and now, when everything Stephen King did was getting adapted. But back when I was a kid, when Dave was a little younger, they actually were doing some good Stephen King adaptations, and then they kind of went south for a while. This was such an iconic miniseries from our childhood, and I think Tim Curry's version of Pennywise was always kind of plastered in people's minds. Like, how on earth are they going to be able to take something as iconic as It and redo it and make it not feel just like a cheap knockoff? But Skarsgård kind of giving his own spin on the character and making it absolutely his version of the clown, I thought was great. Doing just the kid story actually turned out really well, much better than just the adult story. I'd be interested to see if Muschietti actually does that cut where they're interspersed just like the series, if that makes the entire product better. But man, this super creepy visuals, not necessarily played for jump scares, which I think is gimmicky, but in It, every scare is earned, and it's really fucking creepy.
Well, and how I've described it, we did an episode on this, so how I described it is, you know, you have your horror movies where there's a jump scare, it's like, ah, and then it's over.
Gotcha.
But It is, ah, I'm going to get you, and I'm going to keep trying to get you. Like, it's that jump scare, that's not the end. That something jumps out to scare you, but then that MF-er is chasing you. It's terrifying. It's not relying on jump scares to just fake you out and get you moving on. Like, it's out to legitimately terrify you. And there are some moments in this movie that are legit terrifying. It was just a really, really good and surprising movie because we hadn't had like a massive Stephen King hit in a while. This came out, you know, not big names, not a big time director.
I mean, the biggest name was probably the kid from Stranger
Things. But even that, this was the same summer that this was only a couple months after Stranger Things debuted. Yeah. So Finn hadn't really blown up yet.
No,
so,
but at least he's a recognizable cat. Yeah. I mean, Skarsgård was not.
No. Lillis, no. So, I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere. It made a ton of money.
Yeah.
Because it was really good. It did a lot, I think, for mainstream horror. It did a lot for August, September horror. Spoiler alert, we like horror movies.
That's going to become apparent.
We stay in the horror genre. So our number 13.
Lucky number 13.
Lucky hit for a first-time director. I mean, I don't want to call it luck. Yeah. It was done well from John Krasinski, starring Mrs. John Krasinski and Mr. Emily Blunt, John Krasinski, as well as Millicent Simmons. It is A Quiet Place. Let's release a horror movie in March or so where there's not much competition, and you hedge your bets that people just go out to see it, and when you give them a good product, I don't just think it's a good movie. I think this was a great movie-going experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Because of the sound.
Or the lack thereof.
Yes, because of how the concept of it, to where you're sitting in total silence. And
nobody's going to come in and interrupt you, ask you for anything. You're silenced your phone, so that's not going to go off. You're not checking emails. You're in there with the silence.
It delivered. It built up these characters. John Krasinski, I thought, was really good. Emily Blunt was robbed that year. I feel like she could have gotten... That was the year she could have gotten an Oscar nom for this and for Mary Poppins. Double robbed. You know, you had this and a movie we compare it to a lot, Get Out, because that was the year before it, and they were both first-time directors from people who were known more for comedy. and they kind of blew up, and Krasinski's moving on to do Quiet Place 2, which looks decent. I don't need a Quiet Place 2.
Absolutely not, but
I don't need it, but I'll check it out. I'm interested to see what he does after this. But yeah, I'll watch Emily Blunt, Whisper. Sign me up.
What I enjoyed so much about it, and some of the other horror movies that we have on the list, is that they're unique premises that are all created by the directors. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love derivative slashers too. But to have something that was so unique and clever. I mean, the guy made a silent film that made a shit ton of money with modern audiences. I don't think you can underscore that. And he did it as a first-time director. This I did not expect from Jim from The Office. He really surprised me with how great of a story he put together and then how capably he was able to tell it on the screen. By the time our number 12 hit theaters, we knew of this director certainly more than we had known of Krasinski at the time. That's Paul Feig. He had a busy decade, I would say, as did his star, Melissa McCarthy. She stars opposite Rose Byrne and Jude Law in 2015's Spy. This, I think, is just the best illustration of the power of Melissa McCarthy. We've seen this type of premise done so poorly so many times before. Here's a person that doesn't look like they ought to be able to do something, but they're actually really good at it. The trailers made it seem like she was going to be, you know, this bumbling Chris Farley type character. And don't get me wrong, I love Beverly Hills Ninja.
I was going to say, what came to mind. The trailers pitched it as Beverly Hills Ninja.
Yes. This is not that movie. It's kind of like the exact opposite of Beverly Hills Ninja. But Feig and McCarthy knew what they were doing, and they nailed it. We didn't talk about the cameos in 21 Jump Street. Those are some of the best cameos. Statham has a little bit larger than a cameo in this.
He's a supporting player.
Yeah, he's a supporting player, but holy hell.
50 Cent has a cameo.
Yes, that's very true. But man, Statham is so good in this. I think the temptation would be to use him so much more, but it's a perfect amount every time he shows up. He's so funny. His delivery is perfect. This is a movie I did not expect to like at all. I fucking love it.
This is one of those that I like Melissa McCarthy. You know what you're going to get. Liked Paul Feig. I like all his movies pretty much. And I generally, for a while, liked the newest one better than the one that came before it. So
I see.
This was in that progression. So, I mean, I was on board to see it. I did not expect to like it as much as I liked it. This is the prime example of a director that knows how to write for his lead actress. They'd worked together. There was The Heat. There was Bridesmaids. He had worked with her. He knew what she could do. So Paul Feig, who knows what Melissa McCarthy is capable of, is going to write a better movie for Melissa McCarthy than somebody who's watched Melissa McCarthy movies and thinks like, oh, funny big lady. I can write that movie. So he opens it up and he gives it a lot more. It's not Beverly Hills Ninja. He makes her this capable, really good at her
absolutely
job.
Absolutely capable.
And I love the scene from her training where Allison Janney's like, no, I'd watch it over again if I could. Like, I love that. And I love that you write it perfectly for your star and you give her the opportunity to just be at her best. And then you get this great supporting cast and you let them run with it. And that's what made Bridesmaids such a big hit, was that the whole cast had opportunities to be funny. And that's what this is. Jason Statham was hired to do a Jason Statham impersonation, and he killed it. Rose Byrne is the quote-unquote villain, but she's so funny in this movie. And Rose Byrne is great at comedy. So you wrote it for this great lead, but you don't let her carry all the laughs. They trickle down. Peter Serafinowicz, his part's in it. Her friend. Everybody that shows up, you have really, really funny supporting players along with a great comedic lead. This movie came out of, I'm not going to say it came out of nowhere. I expected to like it. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did.
Not that we were thinking about doing a best of the decade
in
list.
In 2015.
But yeah, this one, before it was released, not on our radar for that.
I mean, just from 2015,
we had a lot.
Dope, Invitation, and this. Just in our top 20 to 12 so far. Our number 11, I looked it up because I thought it was close. It's from, it just missed the cut, from 2014, written and directed by Jennifer Kent, starring Essie Davis and Noah Wiseman. It is The Babadook, a horror movie out of Australia, starring Daniel Henshall, who I loved as well. You see trailers for movies like this, and when you watch as much horror as we do, you learn to temper your expectations, because movies like what The Babadook on paper is are a dime a dozen. They're usually done poorly. They're forgettable. There's not much to say about them after it's done. But then something like The Babadook sneaks in, and it's a movie about motherhood. It's a movie about loss. It's a movie about grief.
Guilt.
Yeah. It's a movie about trying to keep it all together no matter how hard it gets. And it's super well done. It's not a jump a minute movie. The scary bits aren't even what jump out to me. The scares aren't what make this movie to me. We talk about like Toni Collette got robbed for Hereditary.
Emily Blunt. This is the one.
The Essie Davis. Me, this like, is it. This should have been an Oscar nominated movie, at least for Essie Davis. How you can watch this movie and think, I've seen five better performances this decade. Yeah. I don't know how you can say that, but to watch this movie in 2014 and think like, oh, there's five better actress performances than this one, I don't believe that. Lupita this year and Toni Collette last year, this is the mother load of them. Essie Davis in Babadook, if you want to see one of the most raw, personal, intimate performances ever, it's in this movie.
And a lot of times it's these women, and I don't want to classify it, but they are playing mothers. So their ability to show that mama bear side or that protective side and also have something else going, they have all turned in incredible performances. But I think it's after seeing this, I don't want to say you start to notice it more because that's not really accurate. But after this, do I feel stupid saying this should get an Oscar? No. But then you see one every year where you're like, oh, well, actually, this one should too. This one should too. There are awards for genre movies, for horror, for science fiction. But one of the ways you can maybe fix the Oscars and make people give a shit about them is if you pay attention to movies that are in a different genre other than drama.
Yeah, you pay attention to performances, yes, and not just clout, pretty much. When Beast of Southern Wild came out, that was a shock. Kwon Zavala Wallace got nominated. The director got nominated. The movie got... That was one of those years where it's like, whoa, they watched movies. They actually watched not just the stuff the big studios sent them. So, I mean, the Oscars have no credibility for me anymore. They've lost it gradually over time. I think this year is the nail in the coffin. But what we're getting out of horror movies is they're not Scream Queens anymore. Quiet Place, Us, The Babadook. They're not led by Scream Queens. They're not led by these female characters that are only there to survive. They're there to carry a story and carry a movie. And when you cast it right and you get an Essie Davis or an Emily Blunt or a Lupita Nyong'o or Toni Collette, like
a couple times,
or a Florence Pugh, it delivers. And there's so much there in the horror genre that can give the same stuff that these assholes that only watch these dramas. There's a lot of that same element in horror movies lately. And when you give it to somebody like Jennifer Kent and you give it to somebody like Essie Davis and just let them run with it, you could stack it up against any drama or any quote unquote Oscar movie. And somebody who doesn't know is going to look at this and think like, yeah, that's is good or not or better than all the others.
That'll wrap it up for the first half of our list. We do have some better movies, or at least ones that we enjoyed. It's tough. I mean,
that's a good movie. Right? As we're going through this list, this is one like, yeah, I want to rewatch Dope. Yep. Oh, maybe I'll rewatch every one of these. It's like, oh, I could rewatch that tonight. These are good movies.
Yeah, and I'm thinking there are 10 more that we like more than The Babadook or more than Spy even. I mean, this is our list. I think we had a lot of fun putting together. Next week, we're going to run down our collective top 10. And then we're also, right at the end of that, going to kind of run down our lists, our top 20s, each of us individually, just so you kind of have an idea of where we came out individually on some things.
Did you stop at 20 when you did the math?
I don't think that I did, no.
What just missed the cut?
Tell me what is the lowest point total. What was the point total for Dope?
8.
There were two movies that scored it a 6, which essentially meant that it was
just missed the cut. Relatively, like the 21, 22.
Relatively high on your list or my list and not on the other person's. One of them was Wonder Woman, and the other one, I had 3.
What
that all
three?
Hit 6. I'll get to them next week.
Because Wonder
to
Woman,
find out.
Wonder Woman's one of my only top 20 that didn't make the list. So.
Yeah, I had a few, but that's because they all weren't super high on my list. Everything that was pretty much super high will be in next week's list. So I don't feel like I got the short straw here at all. I think this is a pretty representative list. And I think when we get to our number 1 and 2 specifically, you're going to be like, yeah, that kind of checks out.
Yeah.
Even our 3.
Yeah, I think all
if you've been listening.
4 surprised me a little bit that it's that high, but the rest, yeah, I'm good with this list. Are you good with it? We'll find out next week.
Indeed, but until then,
keep it up.